Welcome to Ear Biscuits, I'm Link.
And I'm Rhett. This week at the round table of dim lighting, we are going to be catching you and one another up on our Thanksgiving break.
I'm thankful to be here with you, Rhett.
Thankful to be back.
I'm thankful that you are listening, you who are listening. Man, what if you're driving, you're jogging, sometimes I just like to think about what people are doing.
Somebody's on the elliptical, because I tend to do a lot of podcast listening on the elliptical. You know, when we were recently doing our little tour and we would both go to the gym together,
Well, we wouldn't go to the gym together.
We would go to the gym at the same time.
We were like ships passing in the night.
You would do your gym thing and I would do my gym thing. And I noticed, I came up to you, and actually I came up to you and told you that I'd just seen JJ Redick on the elevator and didn't say anything to him because I didn't realize it was him at first, then I kind of froze and then he got off. Mm-hmm. You, my friend, were on the treadmill, not the elliptical.
Yeah.
Now I do the elliptical because it's low impact, right? So you don't have to worry about any sort of knee, back, those things.
Yeah.
But what's your treadmill thing?
My treadmill thing? Well, I'm a little intimidated by the elliptical. I don't know, I've never done the elliptical. The only elliptical I've done.
We had an elliptical. We owned an elliptical.
I remember back when we were in like the Lillington basement, Rhett shows up one day and he's like, I'm doing it, man. I'm ordering an elliptical. And there's actually an episode of the Rhett and Link cast live where we like.
Great show.
Where we were talking about the fact that you had just gotten this elliptical. And I think the elliptical was like on the set. And I might have used it during that show, and I never used it after that. I'm not going to say you didn't use it after that either, but you didn't use it after that either.
I used it more than you did.
I don't know, something about it intimidates me, and there's no.
I did 45 minutes on the elliptical just this morning.
I just did like, well.
I listened to what I'm going to wreck at the end of this podcast.
Okay.
Because it was exactly that link.
Another podcast?
Uh-huh. Oh,
that's dangerous, man. You start to recommend another podcast.
No, I feel like you get-
They're barely listening to this one.
You get podcasts in people's blood, you want to keep it in their blood, even if it's other podcasts.
All right.
Well, that's my theory.
We should be secure enough in what we're doing here that people can take it or leave it.
I am.
But to answer your question, I don't really have I don't get on a treadmill, much less an elliptical, in my normal workouts. That's not a part of what I do at my gym.
I don't do it when I'm with my trainer. I only do it when I'm trying to get like extra cardio.
I just did it as a warm up, but there's like a screen and you can put
a hike in there.
You can put like like you're running in
you can
Bryce
do that on
Canyon.
On the elliptical as well.
Oh, you can?
It's the same, it's literally the same, except one is like super low impact.
And you know what? I'm nervous the whole time, especially when you came up to me and you scared me.
And also—
All of a sudden out of nowhere, you were like, hey, in my ear.
But the other thing is with the elliptical, the things you're holding on to with your hands are monitoring your heart in the moment and giving you feedback and giving you the accurate calorie.
Yeah, because I don't hold on to that railing when I'm running.
I see no advantage to the treadmill unless I'm missing something. I mean, you maybe look cooler.
Did I look cool?
No, you didn't.
Okay, well then there's not
but,
that.
But I mean, maybe people in general do. Can I make an observation?
I'm also nervous that I'm gonna fall off the elliptical and face plant. So, I said elliptical, but I meant treadmill.
I
should be on the elliptical.
I'm intimidated by the treadmill.
Next time I'm at a gym, I'm gonna get
come
on the
join
elliptical.
Me on the elliptical. No, can I make an observation?
Come join you on the elliptical? Me and you on one elliptical?
Sure, I bet you we could do it. That'll draw attention.
now, you did that. What if I showed up at your gym and like, we literally did everything tandem.
It'd be tough for two men to be on elliptical, but I'm sure we can do it.
Okay.
Let me make an observation.
Hey, let's make a note
of
that. Before we forget, I just want to make a mental note.
Men on elliptical.
To add that to the list. You know, we've got
a running
list. You know what I'm talking about.
I was already thinking it. So.
We're going to go to your gym. We're going to see.
It's not 2020 yet, but I'm thinking that maybe in 2020, on the podcast, I'm gonna stop wearing headphones. Thanks for noticing.
Well, it's hard to notice because your hair is so, I mean, they could have been hiding in there.
But I'm gonna make an observation. You are talking so much louder than you would be if you were just having a conversation with me.
Really?
And it makes me think that I must be talking more quietly than I normally do, because I don't ever think that you're talking loudly, but like you're talking louder than a normal person would talk to a person this close to them. And it's because you have headphones on. And it's weird because it actually really, it really pumps into your ears.
I actually, I would have put money on that I'm talking more quietly.
Am I talking more quietly than I normally do, Kiko?
Well, no, because I'm listening to you through the headphones. I'm hearing you.
I feel like I'm talking louder in order to keep up with you.
I turned my volume down.
Because I was just thinking, maybe I'm gonna do no headphones because I don't really need them. I know how to stay close to the mic. I used my extra long beard as like whiskers and it makes contact with it. I know how close I am to it.
All right, so if I'm talking at the volume that I would normally talk. If, you know, this is link volume at the beginning of a podcast. It's a little louder than how I'll
you
be later.
You don't sound too loud in general. Like someone who's listening right now wouldn't think anything of it, but I'm just saying, if we were just having a conversation and you were 24 inches from me, you wouldn't be talking this loud.
Well, I took my headphones off in the middle of your sentence.
Now you're talking quietly. Now you're talking normally.
I'm talking quieter?
Yes, definitely.
But
because you are talking like this.
You're a lot more quiet.
I tend to use the treadmill. I am intimidated by the elliptical.
Keep talking.
And now, I'm just talking normally.
Well, you're definitely louder in my ears when I have the headphones on than when I take them off.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Oh, I know you. Maybe. I know you'd want to keep those headphones on.
Like, I actually don't know.
Really?
I don't.
I mean, as long as Kiko has headphones on and can monitor everything, make sure that nothing goes wrong. I mean, we have this like mentality that like we're all, back in the day, it was just the us. Nobody was listening to us. So we had to know if something went wrong.
All right, fine. I'll take them off. But listen.
Let your hair breathe.
The real reason we're doing this is something to do with your hair.
Well, I actually feel more free without them on. But yeah, it's like, because I have so much hair now, it does create this problem that then I have to like try to correct. And why take the extra time if it's not doing anything for me?
All right, I'm going raw, guys. We're gonna give it a shot. I think later in this episode, when I talk about what happened to me over Thanksgiving, I think I'm gonna get more introspective. I think I'm probably gonna get a little quieter.
But as long as you remain close to the microphone.
As long as I remain close to the microphone, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
As long as
what
I'm
you
not,
don't want to do is go back.
As long
here.
As I'm not, I don't do that. I'm a pro.
Right.
I'm a professional.
I mean, sometimes I might go back here for effect, like,
okay.
Room effect, and then I come back close like this.
Because
I'm also a professional.
All right, let's just see how this goes. See, Tico's over there adjusting knobs. Are you making me hotter?
Just a little bit.
Okay, I am talking quieter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now that I've taken see, I would have thought it would have been the opposite. Why do I talk louder with the headphones on?
I don't know, and I don't know if I also do. Let me see. I guess I got to do it now.
You got to really put yourself.
See, and there's cords
in a neutral place. Don't overthink it. Just start talking.
So right now I'm just talking normally. Like,
well,
this
you're
is
the, you're quieter.
This is if I was having a conversation with you. Okay, maybe if I'm emphasizing a point, I would
be
like
that.
Okay, I'm making a point now.
To keep talking.
I'm making a point now, and now I feel like. I don't know, maybe I taught the same exact level. I feel like I'm talking the same exact level that I was.
But that's because it's not a blind experiment.
No, but
you're biased.
I'm trying to respond to what I was just hearing.
That's not how science works.
No, I'm responding to I'm putting myself into the mood that I've been in for years.
I know you're trying your best.
With these things on.
It's inconclusive, that's all I'm saying.
Well, what is conclusive is that you talk louder when they're on.
Well, they're off. I don't want to talk louder. I'll tell you something else is conclusive. You messed up your hair.
Yeah, you see what I gotta do now?
You didn't mess it up. It's constantly messed up.
No, if I kept it on for longer, and honestly, that's not the primary reason. I just sat down and I looked into the monitor and I was like,
now I gotta fix my
we
hair.
We don't need headphones. We don't need them.
Until we realize we do. You know what, let's move on, because I got a milestone that happened to me this morning. I wanna share it.
Okay.
And then at the end, maybe we can come back and say, you know what, this is good. This morning marks a moment in my life, a culmination of a project that I've been investing myself in for months. Now, like over 6 months of investment has led up to this morning.
Okay.
And what happened? And I'm extremely proud of myself. I finally achieved it. My daughter drove herself and her brother to school themselves, herself. That's right. My daughter, Lily, 16 years old, has a bona fide driver's license. She got in a car. Her brother, Lincoln, got in the passenger seat and they drove to school. And I didn't take them. Christy didn't take them. And no one had to come back with the car because she drove it, she parked it, she got out of it, and she walked into school. I'm so proud of myself. It took a lot of work.
Okay.
This was not easy.
Now, I know that you had resistance initially in this, the same resistance that I'm currently experiencing, which is—
Way to go, me.
It's a different time, right? And LA is also different than where we grew up. But it has been difficult to get our kids. I cannot get Locke, who will be 16 in February, I cannot get him to begin driver's ed.
Oh gosh. Yeah, and he could have, I mean, I think at 14 and a half, you can start taking the class. So by 15, you're eligible to get your learner's permit. And then you have to have it a certain amount of time.
And until, I'm the only person in my family who is an advocate for this. For some reason, Locke doesn't care because he takes Uber and—
Lily was not motivated, but I was very motivated. I mean, I got two more kids in the house. Like, I'm not the one doing most of the running around. It's like Christy would be like, I feel like I'm a taxi driver. Like she would make that complaint and I would get it. Cause I mean, even on the weekends or like when I would get home, I'd be like, oh, you gotta pick up this kid from here and you gotta take this kid here.
It's bull crap.
We didn't do the hop, skip and a Uber thing that you did. So we never got into that because it wasn't for our family. Okay, whatever. But so we were taking him around. It's like, I gotta stay on it. So it's like, she wasn't motivated. She's got a friend who, I heard her friend say it herself. She was like, at this point, I'm just waiting until I turn 18 to get my license because at that point, you can just get a license and there's no restrictions on it and you don't have to go through all the rigmarole.
I just don't understand.
So she just wait. She's just waiting.
Freedom, like automobile represents freedom.
And I had a really hard time. I was not successful at giving Lily to transfer any excitement or any vision for that freedom that we experienced when we turned 16. Or we're just chomping at the bit. Like, I mean, in October, when you turned 16.
I was at the DMV on my birthday.
Oh my gosh, man. And I was waiting for you to, you came to my house and picked me up and then we just rode nowhere.
It was the only, it was literally
wonderful.
The only thing that I thought about for months.
Yeah, we just drove around.
The idea that it's not a priority, again, I know it's a different time. I've heard this from many parents that they're having trouble getting their kids to care about, even kids back in North Carolina.
Yeah, it's not just an LA thing. And you easily just reduce it to like, well, it's the screens. And I think that there is a level of connectivity that defrays the need to get in a car and meet up with people or show up places because you're constantly in each other's feeds. So you're constantly in each other's faces or you're constantly in each other's video game thingies.
Video game thingies.
But even once we got in the car and we started driving around and realized we had nowhere to go, we weren't complaining. We were reveling and just driving nowhere for hours, listening to tapes. And I never really transferred that passion to Lily. I just started to institute.
Well, you can't. That's not how it works.
I just started instituting levels of bribery and control.
So well, that, yeah, I, there's many ultimatums that I've made that, you know, once you wouldn't be able to drive yourself somewhere, at that point, you're responsible for getting there. And that means financially too. You know, that's what I've said.
Okay. I think this is where you shot yourself in the foot because among many other things, like I said, bribery, like if you make it, you gotta do like a 40 or 50 hour course and then pass the test before you can get your learner's permit, which then you gotta go to the DMV. Oh, there's all, it's never simple at any point in the process. But because we never did the Uber or the, there was never any way for our kids to get anywhere unless we took them. And so I started to say, when Lily would say, I need to go here, or I need to pick up my friend, or I have to show up for this thing, or can you pick me up here? I would be like, no, but I will point out, if you had your license, you could do this. So she started to feel the pain of not being able to do some things that she wanted to do. It didn't happen a lot, but it did happen some. So you don't have that card to play because of the Uber thing.
He's not gonna pay, he doesn't have any money to pay for it.
Okay, so you just, so.
He might
okay.
be, he might
then
be
that
able
does
to,
work.
He might be able to go like one place.
Have you been doing that?
No, I said when it, I'm gonna, I don't know what the timeline is.
Right now.
For when it's like, okay, now, at this point, I'm not taking you to this place, and if you wanna go, you have to pay for it.
Now.
Okay, I have to get my wife on board with this. Here's the thing. I don't know how your wife thought about this. My wife is so concerned about their safety that she's like, you know, I don't know if I want him driving in LA. I'm like, well, he's gonna drive in Los Angeles at some point.
The thing that Christy told me was, she was like, well, when she does get her license, she can't drive that Scion. She's got to get a car with a backup camera. And I'm like, backup camera? I backed up, you know, if you look at all the times I backed up over the years, you could back up around the moon twice in the amount of times I backed up, and I never once had a camera.
That's questionable, but.
Never once had a camera.
Lot. Yeah, in fact, you should learn to back up without the camera before you start using the camera.
Because I can tell you right now.
Sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it's raining and it gets blurry, it gets foggy. You gotta know how to back up a car without the camera. In fact, if you give a kid a car that's got a backup camera.
You're handicapping them.
At the beginning, you need
like
to
golf.
You need to put tape over that backup
like
camera.
Golf? Oh,
put tape over the backup camera until they prove that they can back up.
Like Stevie's webcam.
I am
Stevie puts a post-it note over a webcam.
Right. Now I am exclusively reliant upon the backup camera. I can back up at
like a
78 miles per hour.
You can back up 70.
I come down my driveway. You know my driveway's kind of steep and nuts.
You don't even have, you don't give it a bit of gas and you're accelerating like a
Yeah.
Like
I got
a rocket.
Pedal to the metal going downhill backwards.
Man, if there was a trash can down there, it would obliterate it.
So what, why was it today the first day that she drove?
She's had her license.
She hasn't wanted to?
She's had her license for a few months and she's been, well, to park at school, it's all curb parking. And they do
they don't have enough parking.
Teach curb parking. They do not require parallel parking or curb parking as part of the driving test.
Yeah.
So I had to take her out and start teaching her to park on the curb to prepare her, give her the confidence to park to go to school. There's no parking lot.
Yeah,
it's just street parking.
Right, yeah.
So I took her out and first of all, I never tell her. I'm just like, we're going for a drive. And then I'm like, okay, I want you to park here. It's like, Dad, I don't know how to parallel park. It's like, exactly. Now we're gonna do it.
Kids, man. Kids. It's like, why do they say things like that? Dad, I don't know how to parallel park. Why the hell do you think we're here? And are you okay with just continuing on in your inability?
Yeah, I was
I don't understand.
And I
don't think that we were like that.
And that firm,
kids these days.
And that is the reason why I was the one doing it and not Christy. Because Christy, you know, she doesn't want to like fuel Lily's anxiety as she's learning. But I'm like, I'm kind of fed up, so I'm very firm.
Yeah.
But she responded positively, and she parallel parked. I mean, we did it, you know, 10 times. And then I was like, okay, now you can drive to school. She was like, I don't feel comfortable. So then before the break, every day that I could, I would ride with her to school and tell her where to park, and I would just be there to, like, guide her through it. But we basically found a place where she could park on the curb and be the last car so she wouldn't have to do like the parallel parking thing. So we found that and we did that for like a few days. So like yesterday she was parking, getting out of the car, and then I was getting in and driving the car back. So there was a couple of weeks of that.
And did she know that today was the day?
Yesterday she knew that, yeah. And she did it. And I wasn't totally ready. I was in the shower and I was like, oh man, she's about to leave for school and I don't want Chrissy to take her. I wanna make sure that she goes. So I put a towel around my waist and I got out of the shower and I run downstairs as she's yelling at Lincoln, we gotta go, it's time to go, which is every morning. And then I met him in my front yard. I'm wearing nothing but a towel. And I'm like, you can do this. You can park. You can go to school on your own. Let's take a photo. She refused the photo.
Smart girl.
But I'm very proud of Lily. She did, I mean, I am proud of myself, but I'm proud of her too, because she responded, you know? And you know what? She's starting to get it. Right when we got back from Thanksgiving break, we're like driving back from the airport and she's like, when we get home, I'm gonna go see a friend of mine.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I'm like, yes, you do, you go girl, well, you
not,
do that.
It's not just freedom. I mean, first of all, it's illogical because you are going to need to drive at some point, right? And so the more experience you have up
never
until-
drove.
Most people are going to need to drive. And the more experience you have under your belt, the better you will be at things. It's just like starting something earlier. Like when you go back and you're like, I wish I had taken up skiing before I was 25 years old, because you start doing things that are involve like coordination on some level. The younger you start, the better you are for the rest of your life.
Yeah, like learning Japanese.
It's not exactly, but similar. But then the freedom isn't just for them. It's for you, the parent, as well.
It's mostly about me.
Yeah,
I think I've made that abundantly clear.
And I don't know what it is. I know that our wives have a significantly higher tolerance for just like doing things for the kids than we do. But I'm just like, Jesse, I mean, doesn't it just frustrate the pure hell out of you that you have to like stop doing something and take the kids somewhere? I mean, for me, I guess I'm more selfish. I'm just like, no, I don't want to take you anywhere right now.
Right.
I'm doing exactly what I want to do.
But the selfishness lines up, because don't you want to just go? It's a beautiful thing when selfishness lines up in the family. But it did open.
I got to reevaluate, man.
But I will
say. I got to get my wife on board.
It did open up another phenomenon, because she went to a friend's house that night and then we're exhausted because of the time change. And I like texted her and I was like, when are you coming back? And she was like, I don't know. And I was like, well, Jade's been confused because, you know, I went and picked up Jade from your house. Thank you for getting Jade from the place for me.
From the place.
So I wouldn't have to wait until the next day to get Jade from the place, from the kennel, the non-kennel kennel. I really appreciate that. That's being a good friend, getting my dog.
It was pretty easy.
I was like, Jade hasn't located you, so she's like anxious, she's worried. So you need to come on back home. She was like, well, I can come back in 10 minutes, or I can come back right now. It actually worked. But then I realized, I went down and I took Jade and we were like in her bed waiting for her to get back, like just sitting on her bed. And so it was now we've moved to the waiting up phase of kiddom. And I didn't think I'd be that guy. The waiting up for you to get home before I go to sleep parent. But I kind of did it for Christy, because Christy was exhausted and she was like, when's Lily coming back? And I know that she would want one of us to stay up. So I kind of did it for Christy. I kind of did it for me though. So I don't know if this is a new thing. It doesn't sound selfish, it's weird. I was waiting up for my child to get home.
Yeah, I do think that they're, I do think we probably apply different standards to like how much you worry about Lily being out late as a girl versus Locke being out late as a guy, you know. But there definitely have been times when Jesse and I have gone to sleep and he's not back yet.
But it's part of the plan.
Yeah.
Does he wake you up when he comes home? He's like, hey, I'm back.
We tend to not be very plan oriented in the McLaughlin household.
He doesn't have a curfew?
Oh, yeah, I mean, he can't stay out until whenever. Like, we know what he's doing and where he's going, and I can locate him with my phone or whatever. But it's kind of like, I know who you're with and what you're doing, and there's a general sort of expectation of when you'll be back. It isn't like, oh, it's 1 a.m., I'm back. But there, and it's not a normal thing. I'm just saying there have been times when we just go to bed and it's like, all right, we know where he's at. He's coming home. He's not like spending the night at this house. I'm not saying it's wise. I'm just saying that we tend to not be real concerned.
Okay, hey, no judgment. I'm just thinking, I don't know if that's where I'm headed next. We haven't even gotten into our Thanksgivings though, so we should do that.
Okay, let's talk about Thanksgiving. We had pretty different Thanksgivings because you went back to North Carolina, saw family, and I did not. And I actually, on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, I had people at my house that I'd never met before.
Yeah,
For Thanksgiving.
I how did that happen? And you also—
It was just people walking by, I invited them in.
You told me you were gonna fry two
turkeys.
There's
a woman that walks backwards up the hill. I was like, come on in, tell me why you do that, it's crazy.
What?
You haven't seen these people who walk backwards?
What are you talking about?
There is a thing that people do, and I think that there's probably a story behind it. There are more than a few people who walk backwards.
Up hills?
Some people walk backwards in general, but the people, in fact, there's a person, she hasn't done it recently, but Kelly Oxford, you know, writer, filmmaker, she on her Instagram used to like show this dude who was walking backwards everywhere, and it was just flat surface, walking flat. I haven't seen that, but there's at least two people in my neighborhood who walk backwards, but they're always doing it uphill. And I don't know if they're like, I feel safe, because if I start falling, I don't know what it is. But I saw the woman this morning walking backwards.
There are two people in your neighborhood who walk
at
backwards
least
up
two.
Hills.
And I don't know if one started and the other one was like, that's a good idea. But I think this is a thing. I think there's a philosophy to it, to walking backwards up hills.
I can't come up with what that might be.
But it was really just a joke because I didn't invite her in. Those weren't the people that I invited. It was just people who came with friends.
I think it might be a physiological pain thing, like a knee or ankle thing.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt my knee when I walk backwards. Yeah, I'm sure we can figure it out.
Are they older
but
people?
Not now. Over 40, is me. Well, I guess I'm old.
Well, and you told me that you were frying two turkeys, and I was a little worried about that. Three?
Yeah, triple turkey.
Triple turkeyed.
Triple turkeyed.
So you must have invited a lot of strangers to your house.
Well, it's a little complicated.
I assume that it's just people Jesse knew that you didn't know.
No. There were two people who neither of us had ever met.
Isn't this what you said last year that you didn't want to do this year?
I probably did. I say a lot of things.
You were talking about Thanksgiving last year.
My kids stay out whenever they want to.
It was a bunch of people. And you were like, you know, I think I'll do it differently.
Well, I will say, okay, here's what I'll say. You weren't at that Thanksgiving last year, right?
Nope. I was at home.
So you've heard, I feel like I can—
I was playing cards at a gas station,
I feel like
remember.
I can speak more freely about last year's Thanksgiving now that we're a year out from it. But so one of my friends invited a lot of people to a Thanksgiving celebration, a Friendsgiving, if you will, but it wasn't really a Friendsgiving because it was the majority of the people who were there, I feel like I didn't know, or at least half. I can't really remember, but a lot of people I didn't know. And I didn't really mind it, but the thing that really was a problem is that they had gotten this guy who was a chef to make all the food. And it was like, the expectations were really, really high, but then he just did a really LA sort of approach to
things.
Okay,
I remember that.
He did a dressing that is best described as a deconstructed dressing. You know, like it was just kind of like pieces of bread that, I mean, it was—
This is all recap.
I know, but I feel like it's a setup for why I did things the way I did them this year.
Okay.
And I did not tell, this is all new information because I didn't talk crap about the food. I'm doing that a year later.
Oh.
There were some vegan friends of mine who brought a bunch of vegan desserts. Like there wasn't even a freaking pumpkin pie there was no butter in any of the desserts. It's just like, listen, y'all, if just a couple of times a year, you're gonna let it all hang out. Let it all hang out.
Unzip it, unbutton it.
Okay, I get it. If you're a vegan, you're not gonna put butter in something. But if you're not a vegan, put butter in it and put a lot of butter and a lot of sugar and get it to taste good. Like, let that be the goal.
So you were focused on a traditional sugar and butter first menu.
There was so much butter and so much sugar.
And fried turkey.
And a lot of meat. So I deep fried three turkeys. And the reason I did three turkeys is because when our friend Jenny found out that I was deep frying turkeys, she said, you mind if I bring by just a turkey breast and you can fry that too for my leftovers?
I love her.
And I was like, of course, I mean.
Okay,
I
so you're counting her turkey breast as a, yeah, because you got the vat, it's hot, you might as well dunk another.
Right, it was like, and I was almost like, you know what, I'll start with your turkey breast because that'll be, it's a little bit of a guinea pig. It wasn't a guinea pig, it was a turkey, but it would be like my test turkey. And she was funny because she was like, my dad has this tradition of like completely cooking a separate turkey breast. And that is your leftover. So you don't, there's not a lot of pressure on the main turkey to be leftovered.
Just eat it all.
And you got this completely like prime turkey breast that is ready to go. And she was like, and can you put this poultry magic rub on it? And she gave me the rub. She brought me the turkey breast and the rub. And I was like, sure, no problem. But with the other two, it was like a butterball turkey. It was like, you know, a turkey that was like nice and packaged, turkey breast nice and packaged. It comes with it. It's already got like a sodium and sugar sort of solution in it, so you don't need to brine it. Mm-hmm. But of course, my wife gets the like heritage farm, organic, never frozen turkey that's been like, you know,
this turkey's been massaged.
This turkey's probably like taking calculus classes to get ready for this moment. Mm. And these turkeys were like $85 a piece for a 13-pound turkey. Just to put things into perspective, these were some expensive ass turkeys.
And it wasn't a bigger turkey because when the well-treated turkeys are smaller.
Right, they don't have those giant antibiotic-filled boobies. Breasts. You know, that are just like pulsating and ready to be eaten. No, these are like a little more natural. These turkeys have, you know, they've run around the yard a little bit.
Yeah.
So I was like, I gotta get this right. These are some expensive turkeys. And I did two turkeys because I did the whole like, you roughly do a pound per person and that's, you're gonna get leftovers with that. And I was like, you know what? I want a lot of leftovers and I want them, if one turkey turns out better than the other, you know, give me two turkeys. So, but I did the brining. I brined it 2 days ahead of time. I did the rub, and I did all this homemade. Now I followed the Pioneer Woman's recipe. Me and the Pioneer Woman are like this.
Pioneer Woman. She had a television show, didn't she?
Yeah. And so I followed her brining recipe and her rubbing recipe, and then I injected. I had my way with these turkeys.
Okay.
I rubbed them. I injected them. I brined them.
I'm beginning to understand why you invited strangers over.
And I spent way too much time with those turkeys.
You can get away with more bragging.
Well,
when people don't know you that well, they'll sit there and listen to you brag about what you did to your turkeys for,
you know,
hours.
I actually had a lot of self-deprecating talk about the turkeys because I was nervous about them. Because what is the one thing that everyone's worried about with turkey, and what is the one thing that people like you ham men complain about?
You don't want a dry turkey.
It's too dry. And my theory is that it isn't that people don't like turkey, it's that people don't like dry turkey. And that most people, and a lot of people who do not like turkey, have been deprived of adequately moist turkey, and therefore they've come to wrong conclusions about turkeys. It isn't actually dry if you do it right. I'm deep frying these things. I hadn't done that in like 15 years. One time Chris and I did it back in North Carolina, but it was different. I got the electric fryer. So I didn't do the whole gas situation. I read the statistic that 4,300 people a year burn their homes down deep frying turkeys, which sounds like a made up stat, but I saw it on many websites, so it must be true. So this is basically like a giant deep fryer that has a lid and everything. Got the oil, peanut oil, put it in there.
It's all about getting the right level on that oil.
Well, they make it easy. There's a min line and a max line. And if you, it basically said, if your turkey is a certain size or certain pounds, if you put it at the max line, it'll be covered or whatever. So I did that and it was fine. Finished that first turkey. It looked great. Did the second one and the third one. It was not easy to hold to get the temperature because you wanted, anyway. I was a little bit worried because I thought I went a little too long. But boy, the turkey talk started as soon as people started biting into those breasts. And of course, I did dark meat and white meat on the platter. I did dark meat on one side and white meat. And I did the whole thing. Me and Nick, we sat there and we just trimmed it. We took all the meat off. It was completely just—
Do you have an electric cutter?
Jenny, the way that she paid for her turkey is she let me use her electric knife. So I cut it up. It had a little bit of the brine flavor was coming through because I put some orange peel in there only because the Pioneer Woman wanted me to, and I do whatever she says.
Mm-hmm. And she strangled a wolf.
Yeah, and all I can say is the turkey was a success, and I'm very proud of myself. It was the moistest breast this side of the Mississippi. I'm sure east of the Mississippi there were some very moist breasts, because those people in the South can really cook.
Well, the Pioneer Woman is west of the Mississippi as well. She's probably cooking up a turkey.
Because she's on the plains?
Yeah, she's cooking up a turkey this year.
And Jesse was like, well, you're in trouble now because you've got to do that again. You have to do this every year that we're here because you've shown that you can.
Like living, like above the ground?
But the problem is so much time. In fact, I actually had this whole idea that I was going to Instagram this process. I had a whole character, Terry and his turkey tutorials. I had a whole character, I had a pair of glasses. A whole thing that I was gonna do. And as soon as I got into looking at the directions, I was like, oh gosh, I don't have the ability to be entertaining and do this right. Maybe next year, Terry and his turkey tutorials.
Turkey Terry gonna come back.
We'll be back. We'll be here for the first time because now I understand what I'm up against.
Turkey Terry had to tarry until 2020.
But it was a success. But the phenomenon of, and just so you know, I'm gonna talk about my Thanksgiving and then I'm gonna hand it over to Link and he's gonna talk all about his Thanksgiving. I'm not intentionally hogging the conversation. Yeah. We have a plan.
Don't bring a hog into this. With turkey.
But you did have a hog on your Thanksgiving, I assume. But you didn't have the, I should have kept some of that breast behind for you so you could see how moist it is. But anyway, having people—
I'm a ham man.
I wasn't particularly, I like to save the ham for Christmas. That's the thing, I'm a ham, Christmas ham, and I like, they're so close together. The holidays are so close together. They're like a month apart. So I feel like ham? Can a ham man have too much ham? I feel like I can.
I don't.
I wasn't super excited about having people that I didn't know because I tend to be a hermit and a loner. And I'm the kind of guy that when there's a bunch of people at my house, I like go upstairs for a little bit. I'm that guy.
Yeah.
But my wife, as you know, and she's like the most welcoming and hospitable person on the face of the planet. And we'll talk to a stranger until like 4 a.m. And so I was like, no, this is good. I want to adjust.
This meaning what?
Having people that I don't know is great.
Well, how do people you don't know show up? Is it people?
They knew people that I do know.
So it's like, hey, bring other people.
Well, it's like, hey, we're
in LA.
One family and they're like, well, we were gonna get together with so-and-so. Can we bring them?
Okay.
Oh, and she was gonna bring so-and-so and he might bring so-and-so. It's the chain effect.
Yeah.
And we were like, sure. It must have been like 18 people, whatever. But it was great. And the thing that, it was nice getting to know new people, but it also created this dynamic where we had not planned on like, what are we doing? Like we knew what time we were gonna eat approximately. And of course we ate later than that. And then it was like, we ate kind of late. Like we were eating at like 6 o'clock. It's like, all right, what about Thanksgiving night? Like what? How long are people going to stay? Well, people with kids kind of started
peeling out.
Then a few people stayed, and we're like, "Let's watch a movie." And I don't know who suggested it. Somehow, we decided that we were going to watch Footloose.
Footloose.
Footloose. Kevin Bacon, 1984,
okay.
I guess.
Have you seen that?
I'm an American, yes.
I have not seen that. Sounds painful. It's like your foot's loose. It's like, is this a medical drama?
Yeah. I have seen Footloose.
Doc, my foot's loose. What?
But I have not seen Footloose.
Must be with the ankle, I don't know.
I haven't seen Footloose since, you know, that wave in the 80s where most people were watching Footloose. So I kind of knew, and I've seen it, and you know that I know about like the famous speech and to the city council and stuff like that that you see like on YouTube and that kind of thing. And of course the dances.
I know about the dances in socks.
That's really at the beginning. In fact, most of that like close foot action.
Is Tom Cruise in that?
No, you're thinking about Risky Business probably. Oh. When he's dancing with just a shirt. Do you know that John Lithgow is in, he plays the pastor? Because the story of Footloose is that it's this sort of super conservative Midwestern town, which I actually thought was really interesting in light of Bleak Creek and like this story that I didn't think about Footloose one time when we were writing Bleak Creek. But it's interesting.
Well, you know I didn't.
Because you've got this super conservative town where the pastor has a lot of control.
He won't let him dance?
And you can't dance.
Oh.
And Kevin Bacon comes in, new kid from out of town, and of course dancing is his thing. And it's the story of him trying to get the town to dance. I mean, that's a Thanksgiving movie. Now, it isn't a Thanksgiving movie, right? But I discovered something that I've never heard anybody point out. I almost tweeted it, but then that takes a little more effort. Turkey Terry didn't feel like tweeting.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie, spoiler alert, there's a dance. The town gets to dance. At the dance, the camera is moving across the spread of food that's at the dance. And the food at the dance is unlike any food at any dance there has ever been, because it's like whole baked pies and cakes.
Thanksgiving.
And then as the camera tilts up and you see in the background at the end of the table, a turkey. There is a turkey on the table.
It's Thanksgiving.
It's a Thanksgiving movie, but it's not Thanksgiving. It's just their dance. And I was like, has anybody ever noticed this before? There's a turkey. And then I thought about pausing it and rewinding it to make sure that it was a turkey. But then I was like, what if I rewind and it's not a turkey? That'll ruin it for me. And I'm—
plus there's strangers watching.
Turkey Terry.
Who's this guy pausing the movie at the end and rewinding it?
It was funny though, because it's one of those things that happens that feels like a glitch in the matrix, because Turkey Terry has spent all this time on the turkeys, getting the turkeys just right.
He's seeing turkeys everywhere.
And then all of a sudden he's watching Footloose and there's a turkey on the table? What are the chances? This is a glitch in the matrix.
100%.
I want that glitch to remain. And I do think that it's true that there is a turkey on the table. I mean, there's pies on the table and then there's a large brown baked bird at the end of the table.
It's Thanksgiving.
So Footloose is a Thanksgiving movie. And you know what? Shepherd watched it with me, watched it with us, because Jesse and I and whoever else was left, he was into it. You know, we learned things. Kevin Bacon is really held up. You know, the thing that you do now when you watch movies and you're looking at an actor and you're like, it's 1984, how old was he then? How old is he now? And then you start looking at modern pictures of people.
Same.
You start seeing how the actors in the movie have aged, and you find out, oh, Chris Penn, Sean Penn's brother who plays his friend, he's dead. He died in 2006. Oh, that's sad. And then you're like, what does Kevin Bacon look like? You're like, whoa, Kevin Bacon looks good. What has Kevin Bacon been doing to look so good? Not eating bacon, I'll tell you that.
Dancing.
So, and then that—
You wanna hear about my Thanksgiving?
The last thing I'll say is that watching a movie on Thanksgiving night opened up the floodgates and I ended up seeing more movies in a shorter period of time. We went to the theater twice. Saw Knives Out, highly recommended. And then, I've already told you about this, saw Ford versus Ferrari, which is the ratio of how much I wanted to see a movie to how good it was. Like, I didn't wanna see that movie at all. It's like a racing movie, I don't care. Ford versus Ferrari, you gotta see it. It's a great movie, don't make that face. Have you seen it? You need to see it, because I mean, of course it's got great actors in it, but it's just a really compelling story. My kids loved it. I loved it. Jojo Rabbit is the best movie of the year so far.
You already talked about that.
But I saw that before Thanksgiving. What about your Thanksgiving, Neil?
I didn't have a turkey. I mean, I'm trying not to, you know what? I'm gonna try to make this introspective and not a downer. But I think that there's, okay. I just spoiler alert, some downer elements to my Thanksgiving. So it's like, it doesn't have, it's not bright-eyed and bushy-tailed like your Footloose Turkey Terry shenanigans.
Footloose and Fancy Free?
We didn't have, you know, when we went to my nanny's house, it's like, you know, she and Aunt Vicky, they're, we didn't want to burden them with having to make food. And, you know, so nanny was, she's not able to make her signature dressing that we used, that dressing that we would get to like slather that gravy on it every year. I grew up eating that. It was like the perfect Thanksgiving dressing. It's like,
has she written a recipe down?
Because
that's how you got it. You got to hold on. Those recipes.
That's a good point.
Recipes from your relatives.
We really need to ask for
that. Really, really important that they write those down. That's one of the ways that we remember Jesse's grandmother is because
I need
they
to
make
do that.
Those cakes that she used to make.
Yeah, that's a good point because she's not able to make that. And like, we didn't want to burden them to have to make stuff. So like, we brought in Bojangles. And so like,
that's a good Thanksgiving.
And like, you know, my kids were just so excited. Like they couldn't, because they knew we had planned this. Like, we're gonna get Bojangles for Thanksgiving at Nanny's house. And so that's quite a silver lining. I mean, it's not a Thanksgiving meal, but it's Bojangles and we never get that. So
right,
it was pretty
great.
Right. But you know, they're not doing well. So it's like, and we're talking to Nanny about, and like, she's like, I gotta pull my will together. You know, I gotta.
That's fun, talk.
And she's at, so here we are on Thanksgiving, we're like trying to, we're talking about the finer points of the will, you know, which is a very important thing to talk about. And it's, we have been talking about it leading up to Thanksgiving, but like it was, since we were together in the same room, we were talking about it a little bit. So it tends to be a bit of a downer talking about a will, but it's also very important. And it's like,
unless you're a lawyer.
Yeah. So like, that was kind of the vibe this year. There was no going to a gas station and playing cards. Like we had planned things out a little better, but also Mom and Lewis weren't able to show up because of Lewis's health. And actually the last time I talked about it on Ear Biscuits, you know, I guess it was the whole episode devoted to their visit out here and how he basically almost died, right? And then he recovered well enough that they were able to fly back home. And then I remember telling the story that like when he got home, he was like blowing off his garage with the leaf blower. Good, good, good. Well, I haven't talked about it since then, but the update there is a few days after that, he had a series of strokes. You know about this, but they don't. So I'll just kind of bring him up to speed. And again, that was back in April. So ever since April, he's been in and out of the hospital and rehab facilities in order to regain the ability to walk and gain the strength to do things. And he's it's been very difficult. But right before we came back home for Thanksgiving was the first time that he came back home since April. He's been in and out of facilities this whole time.
Just when you were home?
Yeah. Like, I mean, back in July when we went home for, when we were filming in Buies Creek for, you know, the Bleak Creek Conversations documentary that is now on Good Mythical Morning. We would film during the day and then every night I would go visit Mom and Lewis in the hospital, and he was on a ventilator. Mm-hmm. Ventilator may not be the right word. He had a feeding tube and he was not conscious. It was bad. Like he had like four or five near-death experiences once leaving LA since April. And so this is the first time seeing him in person, and he finally has gotten back home, which is great news. So he is on a road to recovery, but they weren't able to come to Nanny's house. We had Thanksgiving Bojangles at Nanny's, and then later that afternoon we went to Mom's and saw Lewis, and like he lost 65 pounds. He's like, looks like a totally different person.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I mean, he looked a whole lot better than he did when I saw him, you know, all swollen and in the hospital every night when I'd visit them in July. But so in a way, it was difficult, but it was also very good to see him at home and know that like he had just been there a few days and like they were very thrilled to be there. I mean, we've learned so much through the process of like just talking to my mom multiple times a week and just seeing how slowly things move when you're trying to recover like that. But for him to be back at home was a big milestone. So it was certainly one of the biggest headlines for us all to be grateful for, seeing him there. And then for his side of the family, he's got all his siblings that he wanted to visit. And then, so there was a question whether he'd be able to leave the house and have enough strength to
Go
visit. He can walk some, but he just, you know, his body kind of wasted away as he was dealing with a series of infections that led to the near-death experiences that I was talking about. So yeah, it's just physically gaining the strength to be able to walk, but he can stand, he can like get in a wheelchair. They're doing like therapy at home where he's like continuing to regain strength, but he was able to go visit and be with his family when they got together on the next day. So it's like, it was difficult going home. And then like, we go to Nana's house and we had a big Thanksgiving spread there. It was absolutely amazing. So, and I remember talking about our highlights of the year last year that like Mom and Lewis came to that. They came to, you know, to my Nana's house, my dad's mom's. I talked about that. But of course they weren't able to come to that. But, and you know, there's a sense of when you only go back home, even at Nana's where it was like, there was a lot more positivity. It's still like, okay, there's still, you know, it's the second Thanksgiving without my uncle and without Papa, Nana's, you know, lifelong partner. And it's like, so there's a sense of loneliness and loss that still is very much there. And I think it was important for us to be there and to talk about that some as part of it. So it's like you find yourself talking about those things as well. And like my aunt saying she felt like that this Thanksgiving was worse than the previous one, because when Thanksgiving rolled around last year, she was still in shock of the loss of,
right,
you know, her husband. So in a lot of ways it was like, oh, this is the new normal for us. But you know, you try to see it not as, I'm trying to see it not as much just as like a downer, oh, isn't this sad, but more like it's sobering, and it does provide an occasion for us to say what we can still be thankful for. But it's not easy to do that, but I do think we tried to make the best of it. Like we dug out remember those old cornhole boards when we did that commercial for the AJJ Cornhole, not the cornhole song, but we also did a commercial for them.
We shot it in your grandma's yard.
In their yard. Well, I was like going through their shed out there and I found the cornhole set and like in the corn bags, and they weren't all moldy, and like we sat out there and
it
we
played.
It
says like AJJ Cornhole on the cornhole.
That was on ours, but apparently we got a bunch of free sets and like we left one at Nana's house. So like we're out there playing cornhole and having a good time, but there's, you know, It's also difficult when you just go back as a family once a year, maybe twice, but the last time we had been back as a family was last Thanksgiving. So it's, you go back, it's been a whole year, everybody's a year older, and the older you are, the more palpable the age piling on is, you know? So it's like, so it's sobering in that way. You know, I got more gray every year, but you know, and so then I just found myself starting to think more about, man, it's as our as my relatives get older, it's like you start to think about like what does care look like? What does care for my mom look like as she has no siblings and I have no siblings and I live out here in Los Angeles? You know, it's like if it was her going through that and not Lewis, as much as I tried to be there for her long distance over the phone and provide support, like how would that be different if it was mom that was having the strokes? And you know, it's like I guess there's a lot to plan for. It's like you can't over plan for things that you don't know exactly. You just got to be ready for the unexpected and take it as it comes, right? But I just couldn't help but start to think about as relatives, as loved ones get older, it's like, well, how do you start to interact with that, you know?
And there's a lot of like, there's a lot of technicalities, like what you're talking about, you know, with your nanny, who's, she's in her 80s, right?
Yeah.
And like she's getting her will stuff together now, which is, this is what a lot of people do, right? Because there's not just the will.
Well, she had one, but then you gotta update it too. So it's not that she didn't have one, but it needed to be drastically updated because it had been so long.
And then there's like the end of life care questions, you know, and like who's gonna take care? Like,
right.
At this point, everybody's still kind of, you know, no one's by themselves, because like your nanny has her sister and then Lewis has your mom.
Right.
And like my parents have each other. So it's like, but what about when they don't?
Yeah, and for that
stuff,
have that. For all of that to happen to Lewis, it's like that was so out of the unexpected at his age, you know? It's like, especially when you have grandparents that are living, you know, it's, and every year, for years, we go back and say, well, you kind of think in the back of your mind, it's like, is this the last year that you see the oldest relatives? But then there's the things that last year that blindsided us, and then this year that blindsided us with what happened to Lewis. So it's, you know, it's, again, I don't have any firm conclusions. I'm trying to find there's still a lot to be thankful for, and I think we are, and I'm certainly glad that we went home, but it's a reminder that as much as you can't plan for it, there's some things you can, like having your will in place and talking about it so that people know what your wishes are. And I think it's good for all of us. I know that we had to pull our wills together years ago. It's, the younger you are, the more fun it is to pull your will together, because it makes you feel good that you're getting it out of the way. But the older you get, it starts to feel a little bit more bleak, you know?
And people just don't, I mean, a lot of people just put that stuff off, you know, and they don't want to have those conversations. I mean, just like, you know, just the conversation that you have to have with your, as you get to be middle-aged, the conversation you have to have with your parents about, you know, and like, it would be a conversation that I would have with my parents and also my brother.
Right.
You figure out like, okay, well, what are we gonna, you know, when it gets to a place where our parents can't take care of themselves, what does that look like?
Yeah.
Is one of them gonna be living with you, with me? Are they gonna be, you know, are we gonna find some kind of care for them? Like, those are really difficult conversations to have, but you kind of, what you don't wanna do is you don't wanna be having to have those conversations in the midst of the crisis.
Right.
I sound like an insurance salesman, but that, I mean, it's true, you know? You gotta have those difficult conversations.
Right. But it's, I mean, and then we're staying with Christy's sister, and we had a great time there. And then, you know, it's nice because my nephew Nehemiah, he's like a little nut running around. So it's nice to have the kids in the mix, you know, like he and Lando having a great time. And but yeah, it was a bit of a, I don't know, it also not being there. So then when you go back, it's like, oh wow, everybody's older, you know? Ain't nobody getting younger. So it just feels, it it feels like, man, you're not an active part of your loved one's lives, or you're a much less active part of it just because of the sheer distance associated.
Yeah.
So it's just the way it is. And I think at this point it's the life that we live, you know, and it's not unusual. It's not wrong.
Well,
but it's not.
But you know what it is it's very unusual in the course of human history, because it isn't until very recently, like a blink of an eye in the timescale of human history, where people, like, what do you mean you don't live at the same place with your parents?
Yeah.
Like everyone did that. And it's still, and obviously that's still the case in a lot of cultures, but especially here, it's just like, it's the exception to the rule if you live, you know, well, a lot of people are still kind of close in proximity, but a lot of people were actually in the same homes, you know, with multi-generational homes. And yeah, I don't know. We haven't really figured out what, like the expectation that, I think the expectation still holds that your family is going to be responsible for your care in one sense, but that doesn't mean what it meant for most of history, which is like directly responsible for your care. It's right. More like, no, we're going to get someone whose job it is to care for old people. I mean, there's a huge industry, right? And
right.
It's just like it's a weird thing, because it wasn't ever like that. It wasn't like, oh, there are people whose job it is to come into our village and take care of the old people. No, that we do that.
Yeah. And I do, you know, I haven't, again, I'm starting, I've been prompted because of this experience to think about it, but it's not like I've started to figure it out. But I do know that I'm not like, well, I wouldn't, that sounds gross, or I would never do that, or like, passing preemptive judgment on what other people do, or like, you know, it's,
yeah,
I know it's gonna be complicated. But thinking about it a little bit at a time is better than just continuing to put it off. So I think that's one of the applications. And I think another one is just being, I'm very grateful that we went back, and that the time that we spent there was quality. You know, it was special. At each place. I remember, you know, I choose to hang on to the moments and the memories, like when I dozed off after eating all the Bojangles on the couch bed that Nanny sleeps on in the living room, and I woke up to Lando and my aunt just dying laughing because Lando was showing her how to use the face filter thingies on, I don't know if it's Snapchat or Instagram. I don't even use that stuff. But like, she was cackling.
This was her first experience with it.
First experience with it. So it's like, you know, you eat your food, you doze off, and then you wake up to that, and it's like, that's what we're here for. You're here for those moments when—
Here for those filters.
You're here for those moments when everybody can share a laugh, and everybody can share. Yeah, we know we're sharing the hurt of whatever it is that we're all feeling, but then at the same time, we can also laugh at how stupid we look with these face filters on.
Was there turkey served at Nana's house?
Yeah.
So some people did consume turkey.
But my dad brought
honey baked?
A pork, he had smoked a bunch of pork loins the week before for something else, and he had a few more. And so he heated one of those up, and that's what I ate, and it was amazing. Mm. Ham, man.
We've got a lot to be thankful for.
Yeah, I'm thankful for everything that we've had, and the things that we don't have anymore. I'm thankful that I once had it, and that there was still a lot that we did have and to be had. So,
and carry that spirit of thankfulness through the seasons. Don't just be thankful one day out of the year. Be thankful every day. Be thankful that another day has happened.
And
you're a part of it.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I mean, we're gearing up for our top 10s of the year. That's the next episode, right?
The last episode of the year, the next episode we're gonna do, the top 10 best moments of each of us.
Oh yeah.
In 2019. Personal, professional, otherwise, what else is there?
You gonna shut them down with a rec?
I got a rec. It's a podcast. You might be familiar with Radiolab, which is one of my favorite podcasts already. Well, Jad Oppenrod, one of the, I'm probably saying his name wrong, one of the hosts of that show, was gonna do an episode or so about Dolly Parton. And then when he got into the process, he realized that there was a whole podcast. So now there's a podcast called Dolly Parton's America, which I think is still a limited series, 7 or 8 episodes in right now. But I've been listening to it. I love it. And it's not just, it's because it's not just about the details of like the history of Dolly Parton and like her career, but it's how an icon like her has built this audience, and then like what she has done, what that says about our country and the state that we're in right now and the polarization of America and like the political divide and how Dolly has sort of overcome that in certain ways and why that might be. And I don't even exactly know where they're going with it, but it's just a really insightful, like personal podcast. And I've always been a fan of Dolly Parton. I mean, I've been to Dollywood. I made the pilgrimage, but she's a special lady.
All right, so that's Dolly Parton's
America.
Dolly
Parton's America, highly recommended.
Hashtag your biscuits. Let us know what you think about the conversations we had today. And I gotta get out of here because I have to not pick up my daughter from high school.
High school. Keep being grateful, keep being thankful.
Speak at you next
week. Never stop.